what you say is really important, because many times, because we can understand this much, I don't know if subconsciously we feel like we should be able to communicate at a similar place, but that's not the case. And we feel frustration, but I think it's important to understand that that's okay. It happens to everyone. It's just the way it works. Hi, Ken.
Hello there, Alvaro. How are you?
I'm good. I'm doing great. And well, first of all, welcome to the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on.
No, pleasure to be here.
And as usual, just tell us a little bit about yourself, especially when it comes to your experience with languages. When did you start learning languages? What languages? How did it go? And anything to mind?
Okay. Well, I speak English. I have a reasonably decent level of Spanish, I think. And the reason I learned Spanish was because I was chasing a Spanish girlfriend. Nice. Now, what's not uncommon about that? So that was some 30 odd years ago. So I chased the young lady out to Spain. Things didn't quite go according to plan, but I kind of lived in Spain, and I'm very much compressing this down. I lived in Spain for about a year and a half. So I went from zero to having a reasonable level of Spanish at that point, enough to kind of get by day to day. I did about 3 months at a school, learning all the basics. Mm-hmm. I was very fortunate in that when I went to the school, I was pretty much the only student for that 3 months. So it was one-on-one, which was great. Yeah. And I was doing a couple of hours a day. Obviously, I was able to use what I was learning in a very immediate kind of way, because I think learning a language in a country, leaving the classroom and being able to use what you've learned that day really reinforces things. Anyway, so I was there for about a year and a half. As I say, I kind of came back with a reasonable level, enough to get by. Mm-hmm. Over the subsequent sort of 30 years, I occasionally used my Spanish when I went to Latin America and then back into Spain on a few occasions on holiday. But it was about 4 years ago, I went back to Spain on a job and I had to use my Spanish, and suddenly went, whoa, this is awful. I realized how much I'd lost, how much I'd forgotten. And I thought, okay, let's try and beef up my Spanish, more so because I'd actually organized to go out to Cuba on holiday for a couple of weeks. And I kind of discovered something called YouTube and podcasts and all this free learning material.
Yep.
And I just absorbed myself in watching things on YouTube, watching teachers on YouTube. So I picked up very quickly on a guy called Juan, 1001 Reasons to Learn Spanish, who I love because he's just, I think he has this approach which fits my style of learning, which is not teaching.
Mm.
So his teaching process is really subtle. He lives in London. So he lives in the same city that I live in. So I was kind of watching him and then was picking up on podcasts. I felt my Spanish was getting better. I was able to understand more. Was picking up on, I think, Vicente, who's the other Spanish teacher. And there's another lady called Maria. And then I was also picking up on Latin American teachers. I was slightly edging away from those simply because of the differences in how they use the language as opposed to Spain. So I was very much brought up with two vosotros. And obviously as a native English speaker, the plural of two is very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
It's this idea of speaking in a plural form is still incredibly difficult for me to get my head around. But obviously then there's the usted and ustedes, and that was like, that's Yeah, that was, I was brought up when I learned in Spain, it was two, everything was two, and it was just like, yeah. So, but sort of over time, I've kind of mixed and matched. And I think I don't watch TV in Spanish. I find that really just a bit beyond me, but I do listen to radio. So I'm listening to Spanish radio in the morning. It's Canal Sur, Radio Arro, which is, it's all talk. So pretty much 24 hours a day, it's talk. So whenever I jump onto that on the internet, I can listen to people speaking in Spanish. And sometimes I get a reasonable portion of it. And sometimes I sit there and go, I have no idea what's going on. Partially, I think that's not so much because of the language, that's because of cultural, political things which I just don't understand, and as a consequence I don't have any back reference. So anyway, sort of backtracking slightly, I went to Cuba and I was kind of pleasantly surprised at how well I did given their accent, and that can be really tough. So I mean, I was kind of like quite buoyant and have continued my learning process. I was recently in Chile, and again, same issue, very, very strong accent. I struggled a little bit there, but I've also been to Spain recently and found myself quite happily getting on with most people because I'm more accustomed to the Spanish accent. So, I mean, that's a kind of a potted history as to how and why I've been learning Spanish for the last 30 odd years, and still struggling with it. It's, you know, some people say it's a marathon. It's a continuous marathon. This isn't a sprint. It's a continuous marathon. But I mean, no, I'm not, because of my age and because of, you know, my circumstances, I don't need to walk away with a certificate saying, you know, Ken Clay has been awarded X in Spanish. Mm-hmm. I don't care. Right. What I care about is going to Spain, going to a Latin American country or Spanish-speaking country, or meeting somebody in another country where they speak a different language and end up talking to them in Spanish. So for me, it's just like, yeah, if I get something wrong, I get something wrong. If it's not perfect, it's fine. I don't care. I don't need a certificate. Whereas obviously some people who are language learning are doing it as a way of improving their job prospects. And mm-hmm. as a consequence, they need, or it's advantageous for them to have this certificate saying, you know, you've right. achieved this level in this qualification. So yeah, potted history of me and my language learning.
Cool. Yeah, I was just thinking about the certificate thing. Like, I mean, it's like, I understand people wanting to get a certificate, like you said, because of job opportunities. And
yeah.
But looking at it from the perspective of the companies, for example, like I've never understood the value of certificates mm. on a practical level. I mean, because when it comes to your fluency in a language, you can't fake it.
No.
Like, either you can communicate or you can't. So what? From the perspective of a company, you're having the job interview with a new prospect, just communicate in the language.
Yeah.
You're going to see that right away. You don't need to know he or she's got a B1, C1, or whatever the case is. So.
I mean, a couple of the reasons I went to Chile and Spain recently was working for an international company where language is obligatory, where the English language, speaking English, is obligatory. And walking around the offices, I mean, I took a strong decision in those two countries, Spanish-speaking countries, not to speak in English, mm-hmm. Except when I was around other people within my crew who did not speak Spanish.
Right.
But one of the things which was quite evident was that the level of English that was needed at times was not there with some of the people I was speaking to. When we were in different chats, you could hear they were struggling in terms of being able to communicate in English. And other people had really, really good levels. So, you know, mm-hmm. why do you need English in a company when you're not using it every day and or your level is not good enough? I can see the real problem there because,
right.
yes, they must have some kind of certificate. They must have some kind of, have been assessed.
Yeah.
But yeah, with this inability to communicate, with another person in that language, and especially a native, because we are the worst people. You know, it's two, a German and a French person speaking in Spanish is probably a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
But, a German speaking English with an English person, when that's your second language, native English speakers or native Spanish speakers, they just go,
right.
You sit there and go, I think I got one word in three. I kind of get the context, but that's about it. And that's kind of what happens when I'm listening to radio. Listening to language tutors is really easy. I mean, because they moderate their speech pattern, mm-hmm. they moderate the vocabulary mm-hmm. to accommodate the people, you know, they're dealing with. So, but dealing with natives, it's completely different ball game. And yeah, even though you think you've got a good level of the language, when you start with the native, all of a sudden you suddenly go, whoa.
wait a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so. But that's why those teachers, I mean, that content you're consuming is sort of a process in which you're getting better and better as time goes by. But yeah.
I mean, I think using the teachers, using online teaching is fantastic. You know, people like Juan and Maria and Vincente and what have you, they're great. But I mix and match. So I pretty much don't watch any British TV, despite the fact I work in it. I pick an interest, so it'd be, say cars, and then I look for something on YouTube, which has been made for Spanish speakers by Spanish speakers mm-hmm. about cars. It could be cooking, it could be sewing, it could be whatever. As long as it's made by and for, in my case, Spanish, mm-hmm. I'll watch it if it fits my interest bill. Exactly. And that way, you're building up a vocabulary because you're watching something you've got an interest in, you've got an understanding of, and as a consequence, I think you can pick up certainly vocabulary a lot easier because, oh, that's what that is. Oh, that's what. And it's this kind of repetition as well. Mm-hmm. Another thing for me is watching news. So people like Deutsche Welle, French TV, Euronews, especially Euronews and Deutsche Welle, they do quite a lot of programming in different languages, oh. along with the BBC and some of the other big broadcasters. So you can watch news. So when you get big news stories like COVID, like the war in Ukraine, et cetera, there are words which are coming up again and again and again and again. And, you know, you start to pick these up. You may not be able to include them in your, or certainly I know this, you know, what you can listen to, what you understand, and the ability to repeat that and use that, it can be there. So I can understand a hell of a lot more I'm listening to than I can physically use. And I suspect listening to other people who are learning languages, this is quite common. You know, you can understand more than you can actually speak. Potentially you can write that, but you've got time to write that. But when you're speaking, it's an instant process, an absolute instant process, trying to communicate something to somebody else. So,
Yeah, absolutely. It's just anything that you're interested in. Of course, it needs to be comprehensible, as we're talking about.
Yes.
Anything that you're interested in is because you don't even need to find the extra time for it, because that's something you're already consuming in your own native language, right? So you switch the language and that's going to help you, because many times, and I understand it, people tell me like, you know, I don't have time for it or things like that, because they have their jobs, family time and other things. But I'm sure they're watching some content on their own in the native language at some point during the day. So you switch to it. Of course, it's more complicated at the beginning because not many things are comprehensible, right? So you do need those projects in which, you know, language teachers or content creators sort of modify the way they communicate for you to understand, right?
Yeah.
But then once you get to a point in which you can understand a lot of the language, it's about, you know, getting exposed to it. And what you say is really important, because many times because we can understand this much. I mean, I don't know if subconsciously we feel like we should be able to communicate at a similar place, but that's not the case. We're not. And we feel frustration. But I think it's important to understand that that's okay. It happens to everyone. It's just the way it works. And if you look at kids, when they're, I don't know, a year old, year and a half years old, they understand a lot of the native language, but they don't say a single thing yet. It's just how the process works.
I kind of agree with that. And I think you're right about making time, having time, creating time. I quite often drive. So driving is part of my life. Podcast. So I'm not listening to British radio. I've got a podcast on.
Exactly.
Loads of great TED Talks. A lot of these online teachers also do podcasts, which are regularly updated on a daily basis or on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can fill a two-hour drive just listening to Spanish, especially if it's on motorways or something where, you know, you're not intently looking for pedestrians and junctions and what's going on. So if I'm sitting on a motorway, I can listen to something which is probably a little more complicated. If I'm driving in town, I'm listening to something which is a lot easier. So I'll be listening to, you know, Juan or Vicente, and just because I can listen to those and not really stress about what they're saying. If I'm on the motorway, I'll be listening to a TED Talk native speaker, and I'll just be because obviously I'd still need a span of attention in terms of what's happening around me, but it's not that intense. Vehicles, traffic lights, zebra crossings, so I moderate what I'm listening to in terms of the conditions around me. But, you know, traveling, sitting on a bus, headphones on, listening to something, walking to the shops, headphones on, listening to a podcast. I mean, at times, you know, you get distracted by something and you can come back into the chat and you can leave the chat and just, there are 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes a day. I mean, the one thing I don't do, which I should do, and I struggle with, is reading in Spanish. But then I struggle to read in English. It's not something I do. It's not part of me. It's not my makeup. You know, I can watch something, but give me a book and I'm like, I can read a newspaper because I'm very interested in news and current affairs and what's going on in the world. Mm-hmm. So I can kind of do that. And generally, they're quite short pieces. Or I tend to choose these shorter pieces. I don't go into the 3-page spread in El País about, you know, the current situation in Ukraine. I'll choose the sections which will give me that sort of 5 minutes of reading practice rather than an hour and a half of reading practice where I'm just like losing every fourth word and just going, that's it. I've lost my will to live with this one. Because I think that's the other thing as well, is that if you choose something which is too high, you can lose the will to live because you just don't understand enough. I think it's a case of trying to find those podcasters, those YouTubers who you can listen to and who you, I'm not gonna say, somebody said somewhere in the region of 70 to 80%. If you understand 70 to 80%, stick with them. If you don't, drop down and try and find somebody you can listen to whose level is at that kind of 60, 70%. Mm-hmm. If you're understanding 80, 90%, the bar's too low. You need to be fine, unless you are literally listening to natives. I mean, if you're listening to the radio and you're at that level, I think you've probably achieved, you know, you're past the point where teaching podcasters who are teaching, you're kind of past that point, or you're just using those as, you know, it's just sort of background noise.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
You're at a point in which you can understand pretty much anything if you understand native resources.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I will say is that this is something I noticed both in Spain and in Chile and elsewhere, is that I can speak to you, and you'll find this one later, in Spanish, and that's fine. One-on-one is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Two people, the difficulty level starts to grow and grow. You get to three people and you're pretty much at the end of your limit. That's when it really does stretch. That one-on-one is easy because you can control, especially if you initiate the speech, because you know what the topic's about.
Right.
Because one of the things I found that if somebody came in at a tangent, start speaking to me in Spanish, your brain goes tick, 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 click, bang, okay. And it takes that little bit of time for you to get into what they're talking about. So, I mean, there were a couple of observations I came away with from being in Spanish-speaking countries is that one-on-one,
mm-hmm.
you can control that because you can say, sorry, I didn't understand. What does that word mean?
Right.
Again, two, depending upon how they speak. But once you get past two, I struggled. And once you're in a group,
yeah,
forget it. It's noise. It makes. And that, again, that's another thing which absolutely decimates your ability to understand is noise.
Yeah.
I was in a restaurant with somebody I do an exchange with, English and Spanish. And I was in Spain. I was able to meet up with this person. And they took me to a restaurant, Spanish restaurant. And as you know, they're not exactly the most quiet places. Hard floors, hard ceilings, hard walls, a lot of people, a lot of chat, and even a simple conversation at a meter and a half all of a sudden becomes a nightmare because all that ambient noise makes the communication, the understanding of that person really, really difficult. And the chats weren't difficult. This wasn't about getting a this wasn't about getting a man on the moon. This wasn't about, you know, operating brain surgery. This was about simple things, things we do. But noise absolutely killed the ability to follow the chat. It really made it really, really difficult. And after about an hour and a half, I was wasted. I was like, whoa, that was hard work. And it shouldn't have been. If it was like this, it'd be going, yeah, fine, not a problem. I get it. The occasional word, yeah. But yeah, so things like that can make holding a chat with somebody, especially a native, really, really problematic.
Right, right. Because, yeah, you're talking about groups of native speakers, right?
So, yeah.
Because, yeah, I guess it's human nature. Like, when you're, if I'm speaking to you in Spanish, I'm going to communicate in a way that you, that is comprehensible for you. But the moment another Spanish, a native Spanish speaker shows up, when I talk to him or her, I'm going to speak like in, you know, native speed. I'm not going to adjust as much, right?
So, yeah,
absolutely. But yeah, it's interesting what you said about understanding. I mean, in any case, the way I go about it as a language student myself is I just try different things, you know, according to the level I believe I'm at or at the level I believe I can understand. I just try different things according to my interests, as you said.
Yeah.
So podcasts, YouTube videos, documentaries, books, whatever it is, right? And the way I measure whether it's helping me or not, I mean, it's going to help you somehow, you know, even if it's not really comprehensible, you're still going to get something. But to make it the most efficient possible, I think I talked about it recently that I'm learning Russian. German and Russian, and I'm speaking to a guy from Russia his project is called Russian with Max, and he's got a podcast in which he talks about like real life, like cultural things about Russia and so on, but in a comprehensible way. So he slows down, he speaks really quickly and so on. And the way I measure whether I'm understanding or not, or whether it's helping me or not, is if I'm picturing the message in my head.
Yeah.
So, and I talked about this example, like in one of the episodes, he was talking about leaving Russia by car to Kazakhstan. This year because of the whole situation. Yeah. And so on. So I was picturing the image in my head. Like I could see him drive with two friends in the car, getting to the border, waiting for 15 hours, he talked about. But sometimes as I'm listening to his episodes, his podcast, I find myself just wondering.
Like, oh, yes.
I need to go to the supermarket. So sometimes it's just human nature. Like, you're not going to be able to pay attention for the...
But you do that in your own language. If you're listening to the radio,
right.
Your brain will go off. Because, oh, yeah, I need to do that. And then you kind of come back into it. And I think that's just natural. I mean, I think there's this belief that you need to be attentive to every single word within the podcast. You need to be absolutely listening. Some people will, some people won't. I tend not to. I use it as background.
Mm-hmm.
And I quite often walk away and I think, yeah, I understood what that was going on there. I was quite happy about understanding pretty much the entire context of that. So, and I have to agree with you. Your brain does wonder. Your brain does wonder. You can't. It's tough. It's tough in your own language. It's even tougher in another language to maintain that intense concentration on what's being said.
Yeah. But what I mean is that I kind of measure it by that, meaning that if what, you know, because of the topic or whatever this it is, I'm not understanding as much, I tend to wonder more often. That's what I mean. So that's an indicator to me that maybe it's a little bit ahead of my ability to understand, right? Because again, depending on the language, you can adjust to different situations. For example, if I'm listening to Portuguese or Italian, which are way more similar to my native with Spanish, I can, just like you said, I can, you know, I can cook at the same time. I can clean the house at the same time and do other things. However, when I'm listening to that podcast in Russian or German, which I recently started with, I mean, like a year ago or so, I really need to be on it.
Yeah.
But again, you just try different things, try different approaches. Because if I'm listening to a Russian podcast, I cannot do a second thing at the same time, right?
Yeah. Your brain's going
to adjust to it. You just tell yourself the truth, whether you understand it or not, because it's... You need that, right?
Yes.
For your own interest.
I mean, you say you're speaking to somebody in Russian. I mean, that's obviously one of the other great things about the internet, WhatsApp groups and all these kind of different forums, is that, especially as a native English speaker, I've got a quite saleable asset. So I've kind of talked to three or four different people, Spanish speakers, and then we have this exchange between Spanish and English, which is great. I mean, obviously, there are some languages, say some of the Indian languages, where the saleability and the ability to pick up and find yourself a language partner diminishes quite considerably. So, we both benefit from Spanish and English being international languages, you know, which are predominant around the world outside of China. So that makes it a little easier, I think, for ourselves to pick up and find language partners. And that ability to practice with somebody who is also learning a language is great, and it's free. You know, all it takes is half an hour each to have these chats. And, you know, again, you're just building up your confidence. But I think there's something which we become very... familiar with our Spanish teachers on YouTube. We can become very familiar with our language partner.
Mm-hmm.
And we start to understand the sound of their voice, the sound of, you know, the how they're structuring sentences and everything. But then we go out into the street and we meet Joe Public, who doesn't speak like our language teacher, who doesn't speak like our exchange friends. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, as I've said, you know, in terms of being in Spanish-speaking countries, again, that's when, as is the expression, familiarity breeds contempt. Well, I think familiarity breeds this perception that you're really good at it, and there's a big bump back down to earth when you go out into, or you meet another Spanish speaker or English speaker, the language you're learning, and all of a sudden you go, okay, so they've got a Glaswegian accent, or they've got a Liverpudlian accent, and I don't understand that because I've only ever been listening to somebody from London.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, you know, if I go to Spain and I go to the south of Spain, I know there's a problem. I know there's probably going to be a problem because of the accent that person will have. So I think, you know, all of these things really do help in terms of building our confidence, but I think you can be overconfident when you get out into the real world, because suddenly you will come back down to earth when you realize that the people around you, the people you're communicating with, don't have this perfect, clear, neutral English or Spanish or German or whatever it might be, and they're speaking, you know, I'm speaking to people from Guatemala, from Mexico, from El Salvador, and they're all moderating their speech pattern, and they know it and I know it, because if they're to go into their regional accent, into their, you know, the regional words, they get it. A bit like me speaking to a Russian, I'd be going, yeah, no idea. No, you know, it's yeah. Another thing I think, which I don't think is often that widely disseminated when you're listening to people talking about language learning, is like, yeah, I can listen to Juan, not a problem. One word in a program I might have a struggle with. I like his podcast because they're just fun and they're just entertaining and they're easy to listen to. But yeah, get somebody from Guatemala from the street and all of a sudden you're going, is that Spanish? Is that Russian? I have no idea.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's one thing that helps me a lot is being or communicating that upfront. That, I mean, obviously, if you're going to a store, you're not going to tell everyone, like, can you speak a little bit slow? You're not going to say that to everyone. But
yeah.
Like, I live in Poland here, so when I can speak the language, but again, depending on the situation, I might struggle at times, right? So
yeah,
what I try to do is I tell them upfront that, I mean, obviously they know I'm not a native speaker the moment I'm speaking, right? But like, if you can modify the way you speak a little bit, or, you know, I'm gonna make a lot of mistakes, but that's fine. You know, communication is the most important thing. So yeah. I tend to over communicate upfront what I think is going to help me. And most people are more than okay with that. And again, this is sort of a transition moment as well that's going to get you to a point in which you don't need that anymore, right? Mm. But yeah. When you said the last thing, I was thinking about the fact that I started learning Portuguese like several years ago. I learned their Brazilian accent because it's more clear. It's easier to understand. And I remember I felt like I had a pretty good level of Portuguese. I mean, I could understand 100% from Brazil, communicating the language. And then I went to Portugal, to Lisbon, because I went for a weekend and I had a friend from my Erasmus year here in Poland,
yeah,
from Portugal. And I called him, you know, and I met with him and his friends in a bar, back to your point. And like the first 15, 20 minutes was, I thought to myself, like, what language have I been learning? You know, because there was like background noise, the different accent. In this case, the European Portuguese is sort of more closed than the Brazilian. It's
okay,
harder to understand because just be like, I don't know.
Mm.
Wow, the first 15, 20 minutes were tough. Like, what's this language? You know? But then you start to relax a little bit. And back to your point, the first 15, 20 minutes, I was sort of in a group setting. Mm-hmm. So they were talking between, you know, among each other and so on. But then as I started speaking one-on-one with different people, that was different. I started to understand, you know.
Yeah.
I started to feel like, okay, so this is the language I've been learning. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm in Portugal, not in Georgia.
Well, I mean, one of the accents I do like is the Argentinian accent, and as they've apparently just kind of taken this J sound and they've thrown it away. And it's lovely to listen to, but oh my god, it's just like it's absolute concentration. And I mean, I have heard people talk about the difference between Brazilian Portuguese and Portuguese from Portugal, of course, because obviously that's why it's called Portuguese. And the fact there is this difference in the openness and how they pronounce these words.
Yeah.
So, you know, with languages like Spanish and English, which are spoken in quite a few different countries, the differences between how natives in one country will speak and how they will speak in another country, the slight grammatical differences. I was on a chat yesterday with an American, and we were just chatting, and people were coming in from around the world, and we were chatting to them. And on occasions, words would pop up, and we just go, "How did you just say that word?" And it's like, "What do you mean you don't say it like that?" And you know, just those little differences, those subtle differences, can be enough to cause problems. If all you've ever listened to is the American accent and that sort of standard American accent or the standard British accent, And all of a sudden you just meet somebody from the deep south of America or from Glasgow, and that accent is enough to make your life an absolute, nightmare.
I think many times, let me explain. Many times it comes down to, in my view, it comes down to humility. Let me explain what I mean. Because I find myself in those situations that when I'm in a bar setting or whatever it is, that I tell them up front that, you know, I'm going to make mistakes. I may need you to adjust a little bit. So I'm in here in Poland, right? Because many times we don't do that because we try to prove ourselves most of the times, I guess, or other people that we're really fluent, right? And if we don't understand what they're saying, we take it personal. You know, we're a failure because of it, right? So that's what I meant by humility. So but being upfront is actually going to help you, right? So it's in your best interest. So that's what I mean, that sometimes I used to think that a lot, that, you know, I'm just going to pretend I understand. And it's crazy because it's not helping you, right?
No.
But it's a matter of, you know, they're going to think I'm fluent. So I'm not going to say I didn't understand. Which it kind of sounds silly, but I remember finding myself in that situation a lot.
Yeah, no, I totally understand where you're coming from with that one. I suppose because we're language learners, if we meet somebody who comes up to us who's not native in our language, we give a hell of a lot more, as in we're prepared to accept mistakes, and we're prepared to just kind of, I get that. I understand what they're on about. But I think if you meet somebody who's not a language learner, who doesn't have a second language, or in your case, fifth, sixth, seventh language, they probably don't quite understand the difficulties and don't give that space to allow the person they're speaking to just grasp what they're talking about.
Right.
And obviously, if you're in a shop, you know, they're busy, they're serving other people. Being a teacher for you is not their first concern. Doing their job is their first concern. But I think you're right in that, you know, briefly explaining to somebody, I don't speak a lot of X, Y, Z language, whatever it is. That kind of, I think that's a fairly decent thing to do. And I think you're right. When you shouldn't blame yourself because you don't understand the person you're speaking to, because, you know, they're not giving you the advantage or the benefit of the doubt. They're doing a job, they're doing something. Right. And, you know, you're just somebody in front of them they have to deal with, and they want shot of you. They just, shop, they just want to get you through and get you past. And I think you do blame yourself, and I don't think you should. And I think you're right with that one. You shouldn't blame yourself, because it takes years and years and years to become fluent in a language. And I think for a lot of people, they're learning a second language in their own country. They haven't got 8 hours a day in a workplace immersed in that culture, in that language to learn. They're doing it for a couple of hours a week. They're doing it for 15, 20 minutes a day. Hey, you know, there's only so much you can do unless you are blessed with the ability to pick a language up. Most of us struggle like hell to retain words because we're not using them every day. We just struggle because it's, you know, if I went back to Spain for 3 months, I know my Spanish I would probably really build the foundations a lot deeper. I would be able to really deal with things a lot more. Mm-hmm. I would be able to amplify my use of certain grammatical tenses, which I know I struggle with. But that wouldn't make me native. 3 months wouldn't make me native.
No.
It would just boost my confidence and boost my overall abilities. If I went to live in Spain for 3 years, I think I'd be pretty damn good. You know, given the level that I have, I'd probably be going, well, I'm not native, but I'm pretty much C1. I can get by with most things, et cetera, et cetera. you know, I, again, it's just understanding where you sit on this scale of language learning and language understanding. Mm-hmm. You know, it's being honest with yourself.
Yeah, and I always talk about it, like, as long as it's comprehensible, it's a matter of how much time you're getting exposed to the language, right? Mm-hmm. So if you, like you said, if you go to Spain for 3 months, because of the level you're at, that you can understand real-life situations,
yep.
you're going to be listening to the language for, I don't know, 7-8 hours yep. a day. And yep. again, 7-8
hours. Using it.
Yeah, but what I mean is 7-8 hours a day, as opposed to the 20 to 30 minutes that you're doing right now, where you live in London, right? That's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Again, assuming it's comprehensible. If you're starting out with a language, you know, you're starting out with Japanese, if you go to Japan, even though you're listening to the language for 10 hours a day, it's just nice for you, right? So assuming it's comprehensible, it's a matter of how much time you get exposed to the language.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of the another thing which I think is important for us. So you talk about Japanese, it's completely different. So you look at Spanish and English. It clicked at one particular point when I was living in Spain that there are so many words from French in English which we don't tend to use, but which are part of our vocabulary. So if you have languages which are similar, and you touched on this earlier in terms of Portuguese and Italian, mm-hmm. there are similar roots. There's a lot of stuff which is similar, but there's enough which is dissimilar, which mm-hmm. can really, you know, these false friends, these things which you think you understand because, well, Italian's like Spanish, isn't it? It's a little bit different. The pronunciation's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is a female gender in Spanish and it's male in Italian, but on the whole... But, you know, there's enough there to throw you if you become overly confident.
Right.
You know, but, you know, if you're, as you say, if you're listening to Japanese or Korean or Russian, it's just noise. It's pure noise. And it takes a while to be able to break that noise down into words, which you don't understand, but you kind of go, oh, yeah, I've heard that sounds familiar. That's not just a... It's like musical notes. It's just, if you just bash around, you've just got noise. But once you start to bring those notes together, you think, there's actually something I can vaguely understand as a musical track of some kind. It is about becoming accustomed to the sounds. And even if you're listening to something which is above your level, if all it's doing is just allowing you to break these words down and listen to these words, and you kind of go, get that word. All of a sudden, as I found out that, you know, over time, out of 10 words, you might have started off understanding 2 or 3, but at the end, you're understanding 5 or 6 because you're able to audio-wise identify, pull these words out. You might not understand what they mean, but you can pull them out. I've heard that word before. You know, it's been used quite regularly in a news item or in a podcast I'm listening to. And, you know, you're able to just pull that out and identify it and then maybe analyze it later. Or you hear it in a chat, which you understand a lot of, and that word comes in. And all of a sudden you go, oh, that kind of, I think that means that, because if I link these words I know with these words I know, this word in the middle makes sense. It would make this sentence right for me if I was to say it in my own language. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
Yes, but what I was thinking about is I try not to, as a language student, I mean, I try not to pick resources that I like way above my level, because so the way I understand language learning is that message or communication is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So back to the Russian podcast example that I gave.
Yeah.
I want to understand the message. So if you're listening to the news, like you said, I want to understand what's going on in Ukraine or the COVID things, whatever it is, right? So I've observed that if I pick up something that is way above my level, I tend to focus on form, meaning mm-hmm. specific words or even... verb tenses and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I attempt to take my attention off of form as much as I can, because I know if I understand the message, my brain subconsciously is going to pick up the, you know, quote unquote, the grammar and the structures without me being aware of it.
Yeah.
So that's why it can be tricky at times. You know, if it's too much above your level, I try to avoid it because of that. Because, you know, I'm going to start paying attention because I don't understand the whole thing. I'm going to start thinking, oh, so I understand that word. Or, but it gets me too much in the mindset of picking up specific words, because what I want to do is I understand the message. You know, if it's a story, understand the story. If it's news, understand the situation.
Yeah. But we all learn in different ways. I think we all, like I say, you know, because I don't read. And some people will happily read for hours and happily read a book and kind of go and underline the words they don't understand and kind of go back and research it. Some people are quite analytical, and some of us just kind of pick it up like, you know, I don't know, you just wander around and you just pick up a word or you pick this up. I think we're all different,
mm-hmm.
very much all different. I mean, I think I probably sit closer to you with this one in terms of, you know, you just listen to things and you pick things up. But I certainly know that if I'm listening to something which is like the news, or I don't, you know, I think at my level, that listening to real native chat and, you know, radio was one of those things. It stretches me in terms of the language learning. I'm putting in enough of the groundwork in terms of, you know, the YouTube teachers, in terms of watching stuff on YouTube which I'm interested in, which is again for natives, but it's less intense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I really stretch myself, I think, listening to the news and what have you. It's like, okay, how much do you understand? And I go in there knowing I'm not going to understand it all. I go in there with this mentality that, hey, if I come away listening to half an hour or an hour of Spanish news or Spanish radio, and I come away and I understand big chunks of it, if I understand sections of it, I'm really happy. But it's because I think I have this kind of this varied diet of language learning, of Spanish. So I don't just sit there and listen to Juan because he's a piece of piss to listen to, and I understand him and I don't have a problem. One word in a program, and it's the same with all the rest. I mean, I don't. I think if you don't stretch yourself,
mm-hmm.
you're never going to advance.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, but I think it's this diet, it's this varied diet of things where you can listen to stuff which you pretty much understand all of. That's great, because I think you come away and think, yep, I understood all of that. And then you get to some of the other thing, yep, I kind of got that, or kind of a few words I didn't understand. And then, you know, just occasionally I'll just stretch myself. That's most days, sort of half an hour to an hour, I'll listen to news. And it literally is just a case of going, yep, I've got that. I kind of get that. I didn't get that. Again, some of that is because it's cultural, because I just don't understand the political situation in Spain or any or elsewhere in the world. It's like, and I think the thing with news is that if you're watching news in your own language, quite often these stories are being covered. So you've kind of got an understanding as to the story generally.
Mm-hmm.
Then you listen to it in your target language, you might get Spanish. And it's like, oh yeah, because I understand what the story is, I can fill in those holes. So yeah, I mean, I'm doing that simply because I want to stretch myself, and I think I have to stretch myself. I wouldn't do it all the time because I just think it's just defeats the purpose of the object. You know, you just won't learn. Mm-hmm. You have to have that sort of 60, 70, 80% where you're going, I understand this. If you're listening to stuff where you're going, I've no idea what's going on.
Right, exactly.
Why the hell listen to it? It's about having a mixed diet. Mm-hmm. of content to help you move along with language learning. I mean, unlike you, I'm learning one and I'm struggling with one. You're doing several languages, so how you keep your brain in compartments, listening and working with every single. I struggle with English. I struggle, you know, just like I have to admire anybody like yourself who's doing several languages, especially at the same time. It's like.
So it's, yeah, I mean, it's two things that I just came to my mind. Like, first of all, is back to your point. Yeah, I think you need to find the balance between, you know, like stretching yourself. I agree with that, but not too much to a point that you don't understand what's going on. But in the example of the Russian podcast that I just talked about, it stretches me because, you know, it's a little above my level, if you will, because I don't understand every single word, but I understand what's going on. And again, my way of sort of checking that out is if I'm picturing the image in my head, like, yes. So I understand what he's talking about, why he's fleeing to Kazakhstan, the problem at the border, etc. But I don't understand every word. I mean, not even close. but I understand the message. Yeah. So that's what tells me that I'm understanding.
Yeah.
And when it comes to learning several languages at the same time, that's why I'm sort of obsessed with meaning as opposed to specific words. Because if I start paying attention to specific words, form in general, I'm going to drive myself crazy. Because I'm going to mix Portuguese, Italian, you know, things like that. That's why, you know, whatever resource, whatever content I'm consuming, I'm obsessed by understanding the message, understanding the content. And I don't, because my fear is if I start paying attention to words, to grammar, to verb tenses, you know, whatever it is, then when I start communicating in the language, whenever I want to say something, I need to consciously recall those words. Whereas I want to be able to naturally communicate. Because again, if you're writing, like you said before, you have time to think about, you know, what you want to write down and the way you want to build the sentences. Yeah. But the idea is that when you're communicating in the real life or real time conversation, you just don't have the time to think about everything you want to say.
No. It's
so that's my biggest fear. That's why I'm sort of obsessed with meaning, content. You know, that's the most important thing. So as long as I understand what's going on, I'm fine with not understanding words either. Because many times you don't need to understand them, and other times you're going to sort of figure them out because of the context.
Yeah.
So when it comes to reading, for example, I do like reading. And but back to what you said, I always talk about how great reading is, because I love it, but to learn a language, but if that's something you don't do on a daily basis, that's totally fine. You know, you listen to audiobooks. That's totally fine. But what I wanted to say is if I'm reading a book in a foreign language, on average, well, depending on the language, but in English, I don't look up anymore. But in a different language, in a whole book, I might look up 2-3 words maximum.
Wow.
And only if I feel like I really need to understand what it means, you know, to understand the message.
Yeah, yeah,
right? Yeah. Like I said, many times, so I don't understand this word, but what's the big deal? You know, it doesn't change the story. It doesn't change the meaning. And other times, I don't understand it, and it's kind of important, but the context is going to help me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, something you said there's what. I'm on several sort of WhatsApp chat groups, both English and Spanish, and people write all the time. And I say to them, look, when you go into a shop, you don't write down your list and give it to the shopkeeper. You have to speak to them. And I kind of find it slightly odd that people will just always write and will never speak. And I made a conscious decision, one, on the English chats, because I'm native, therefore, I think it's really handy that people can just listen to these rambling messages from a native English speaker and have to deal with these rambling messages from a native English speaker and understand them. And then in terms of the Spanish ones, that might be the only time that day I get the chance to speak Spanish. Might be the only time that day I get the chance to use my Spanish. The advantage is, of course, with these chats is you can re-record the message several times until you think you've done it right.
Right. You're like, just delete.
Just delete. But that 30 second, that 1 minute message, one, there's probably a native listening going, you didn't pronounce that word correctly. That was the incorrect verb tense. Da, 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 da. And they'll come back and they'll correct. But, or you go back and listen to it yourself. And sometimes you'll go back, you know, half an hour later and you listen to it and go, that was the subjunctive in Spanish and that shouldn't have been the indicative. And you suddenly go, because you've got the time to kind of go back. So just a quick recommendation, if you're on chat groups, always leave voice messages. Always leave voice messages. And if you want, then type it. Because as I say, that might be the only time that day you get the chance to speak your target language. It might only be 30 seconds. And don't make it, hi, how's everyone doing? Seriously, that's beginners. That's first day in class anywhere. You know, it's like, hi there, guys. You know, having a great day. I'm going off. I'm going to work. I need to catch the bus. I'm going to be late. I've had such and such for breakfast. And again, you have this repetition of things which you know, you're saying all the time. So if you're listening to this chat, your English, if you're listening to this chat and you're understanding this, your English is bloody good to start with. Yes. But, you know, and that, I suppose that's half the problem. But, you know, if you're giving recommendations to people learning a language, I'd say if you're on one of these chat groups, always leave voice messages because it gives the chance for one, natives to listen to it, and or two, people who've got a really good level of that language to be able to come back and correct you. And also just say, I don't understand what you're saying. So, I mean, that's a little, I want to use the word consejo because I'm trying to think what the damned word is in English and I can only think of the Spanish word. suggestion I would have is, you know, if you're on these chats, if you're going to leave a voice, if you're going to leave a written message, then do it as a voice message as well. Because, yeah, the more you speak, the better you become. Because, again, this is something we haven't touched on, is that within these languages, English has its own sounds. English has these mouth movements, these tongue movements, you know, the throat movements, which all create these sounds in English, which you as a Spanish speaker don't have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's very easy to read in your head and speak in your head and pronounce these words absolutely perfectly until you open your mouth and your lips, your teeth, your tongue, your throat cannot create these sounds which are typical in English or in Russian or in,
yeah,
you know, so, you know, this practicing every day, reading out loud, if you are going to read, read out loud, because you'll be able to hear the fact that you cannot pronounce R. I can do that on its own. R. Easy peasy. Try and do that in a sentence. Try and drop that Spanish sound, which doesn't exist pretty much anywhere in the UK. There's a little bit of the Northeast where there's an R sound, but trying to create that sound the way
perro. Is
perro, you know, and the difference between perro and perro and these subtle differences in sound. So, you know, I know, again, one of the other reasons I would say, you know, always leave messages. If you are reading, read out loud. And if you're listening to an audiobook as well, and you're reading that audiobook, you're going to be able to hear how this word's pronounced. Because like I said, you know, you probably with Russian, there are sounds in Russian which are not there in English or in Spanish or in German. Those languages which you either have as a native language or you've learned. You know, it's not just, it's, yeah, there's a lot more about language learning. There's a lot more about it. And yeah, speak as much as you can, read out loud as much as you can, practice as much as you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just get exposed to the language or immerse yourself in the language as much as you can. So in those chat groups, are there usually like a lot native speakers, a lot of them, or just?
Depends, weirdly enough, on the Spanish ones. Yeah, mostly Latin American. Because there's a couple I'm on which are English and Spanish. Some of the straight Spanish ones, yes, mostly from Latin America. On the English groups, no, not that many, not that many, less, a lot less. So, but I, you know, they're still, there's a lot of people on there who've got really good levels of in this case, English, and are really able to help other people out. And they're leaving messages and they're writing stuff and they're popping up all kinds of things on YouTube to watch and stuff off the, some of it's not always perfect. There's a number of times I've gone in and went, that's wrong. That's wrong. But there's a lot of good stuff out there. There's a lot of stuff which isn't great, but there's a lot of good stuff. And, you know, I think it's also being in that community of people who are also all in the same boat, learning the language together, helping each other out, holding little chats, Zoom meetings. Yeah, they're all small ways of just helping people to progress or at least maintain their grasp of the particular language.
Right, because I was thinking about, obviously, if you don't have native speakers but other learners of the language, you know, you're going to be able to help each other out a lot when it comes to, you know, recommendations, YouTube channels that you But one thing that will help a lot is if you're a native speaker, if you're in an English learning 10, you, the native speaker, recorded in videos for the other people. Because at the end of the day, you know, if everyone on the 10 is a non-native English speaker in this case, how to put it into words, like I as a language student, I want to listen to native speakers of the language that I'm trying to learn because I want to pick up that accent. I want to sound natural. There's a reason why, you know, non-English speakers who live in the UK end up speaking with a British accent. Whereas those who go to America end up speaking with an American accent. I picked up a lot of my English by watching the NBA. Like I've talked about it many times. So I tend to speak more American than British, right?
Dreadful.
So what I mean is, those things can help a lot. But I think, like, from my perspective, if I was one of the students, having native speakers actually recur messages would be tremendously helpful because I'm going to listen to the actual accent and they can also adjust. They don't need to speak like you talked about. They can, you know.
Yeah. No, I like to say, that's why I took this decision to unless somebody has written something incorrectly, which case I'll correct it. I just leave one because it's quicker because I can't type on the phone very fast. As a consequence, leaving a voice message is so much quicker.
Yeah.
And I know listening to native Spanish speakers on some of the chats that I'm on, it's great exercise. It's like, what was that word? I didn't understand that. Oh, yeah, I get that. Fine, no problem. So I absolutely understand the advantage of having a native speaker on chats because as a non-native, there's so much you can learn from that. There is so much you can learn from listening to natives because there's the number of times, because I there's a couple of Russians I deal with and they've got really good levels of English and they analyze everything I say. And they go, why did you say it like that? Because as a native, I just blabber the rubbish out. You know, it's just like, blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden it's like, and they're kind of going, why did you put those, and why did you use that word and not that word? It's like, because we don't analyze it. They are. So
it's right to me, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's I get asked a lot. I mean, not my students because they already know how I roll, but like people in real life or in the street, everyone's favorite in Spanish is this subjunctive. I mean, not everyone's favorite, but everyone's...
Pesadilla. Nightmare,
exactly. So they sometimes they ask me, so why do you use it there? Or when do you use it? I'm like... I used it because it sounds right to me. You know? But it's funny because I always try that with every different language and the same thing comes up every time. Like here in Poland, they have seven different cases or declensions, whatever you call them. So I, at the beginning, I mean, before I started with my project and so on, I used to ask them, but why did you change the ending? What? And they're like, it sounds right. You know, and that is because they don't know, which tells us something, right? I'm going to go with, I mean, you're in more chat groups, so you might know, but I'm doing this sort of experiment. Like whenever I meet a native English speaker, I ask them, do you know what a phrasal verb is?
I kind of do now because I've seen it so many times on the chat. Prior to that,
no
clue, hadn't a clue. I mean, you know, it's quite often the case on these chat groups that the students know more about English grammar than the native. You know, I'm relatively well educated, but you know, the last time I was in school, dinosaurs were on the earth. So anything I learned about grammar has completely gone. So I don't know, but you absolutely, it's we as natives, you in your case Spanish and make us English, we don't think about how we say it. We just know it sounds, something sounds right. It's like, that's a bit odd, that. Yeah. And again, this slight thing about listening to an American speaking English, and obviously yesterday I was on a chat with an American and a couple of words and a couple of things came up. It's like, I wouldn't say it like that, because in the UK, we say it like this, and in the US they say it like that. And you have a very similar thing with Latin America, with them. That I think it's mostly the past tense, and I think, weirdly enough, I think it is with British and American, it's the past tense which tends to throw up the difference. As a native, an American said it to me, I wouldn't bat an eyelid, be like, yeah, I get it, it's not a problem. But if you're a non-native, you're struggling to understand why a Brit is saying, I'm in the street, and an American is saying, I'm on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, something which is relatively simple becomes a complete nightmare for you, because you can't get your head around, a bit like me with subjunctive, I can't get my head around why it's like that. Why, what's the difference? How do you explain what the difference is?
But that's the issue. You're trying to understand it consciously. You know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes.
That's the issue.
Yeah, and it's, you should be sort of almost learning it like a parrot. You just say it because that's the way you hear it.
Yeah, but like my point in the example you just gave, I'm in the street, I'm on the street.
Yeah.
The meaning doesn't change at all.
Nope.
That's my point earlier about paying attention to meaning, right? So when I'm on the street speaking to someone, you know, I want you to picture me in the street talking to someone, not think about I'm in the street or on the street. You know what I mean? And, you know, whether you personally say in or on, I mean, the non-native English speaker, when you start communicating, that's totally fine. If I use on in the UK, you're going to understand. If in the US, they're going to understand.
Yeah, so that's, yeah, yeah.
That's the most, sort of the most important thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It is. It's just about understanding and being able to react and communicate. And you're, I mean, one of the things I'd say is, like, you know, on the whole, if you get it wrong, nobody's going to die.
No.
You know, for a lot of what people want to learn the language for is to be able to go on holiday, communicate with people around them, get directions, have basic chats. Yeah, nobody's going to die if you get one of the verb tenses wrong, if you, you know, put the sentence structure in a slightly different way. Yeah.
And here's the good thing. Like, no one's going to die, and as much as you care about it, you're still going to make mistakes.
And the person listening to you probably doesn't care.
Exactly. So that's the main point. Like, yeah, like communication, that's the bottom line. So
I, one of the things I am going to say, and I do repeat this quite often, is that I speak English, kind of. I speak Spanish enough to get myself by. But if I go to Kazakhstan, if I go to Portugal, if I go to France, Germany, Italy, Norway, I rely upon all those people to speak to me in English.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That's frightening. Therefore, I cannot judge them if they get it wrong. Because do you know what? If I go to Norway, I ain't going to speak Norwegian. If I go to Finland, I'm not going to speak Finnish. If I go to Germany, I'm not going to speak German. I'm going to rely upon somebody there speaking English. And if they make a mistake, guess what? I am not going to be able to complain, because I'm not going to be able to turn around to them in German and tell them how to. We have to rely upon them. So we cannot complain, or I cannot complain, if they get something wrong in English, if they get a verb tense wrong in English, because, you know, I suppose we both have, certainly I have this advantage in terms of English being an international language, mm-hmm. Spanish obviously being spoken in 22 countries, you know, as big a number, if not more than English, but English being sort of international around the world, I cannot complain if somebody gets something wrong in English. It's just,
So, like you said, I'm just imagining you're in the middle of Kazakhstan, for example.
Yeah.
Someone helps you by communicating with you in English, and they just save your life. I mean,
yeah.
Exaggerating. You're not going to be thinking you didn't use the subjunctive.
Well, they probably wouldn't in English, but yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, and I've had this. I've had this situation where I have been in some of the weirdest places. Met somebody who could speak English, and I've also been in some of the weirdest places where somebody spoke Spanish. So I've been in Japan, I have been in one of the Stan countries, I can't remember which one it was, and somebody spoke Spanish, and they were local, because they used to live in Spain and worked in Spain. Mm-hmm. Their Spanish wasn't great, but it was enough for us to be able to sort something out and get things going. So,
that's all you need. Yeah. I understand, we all want to communicate as well as possible.
Yeah.
I feel that way myself. But first of all, it's a matter of time and patience. But the most important thing is communication. And if you want to communicate in a better way, just keep getting exposed to the language and keep getting immersed. It'll come.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
It's a bit by bit. It's a very slow race. And it will only end when we die, because at the end of the day, you know, as a non-native, or even as a native, you're picking up new words and new things. I mean, you know, there are occasionally words which I kind of go, I've never used that word before. I've never heard that word before. You know, so, you know, it's a constant learning process.
Yeah, it's what you said at the beginning. It's a marathon, not a sprint. That's important. And, you know, the fact that it's a marathon, it doesn't mean that you're not going to be able to enjoy it until you get to the 42nd kilometer. Right? Well, I mean, it's a marathon, but, you know, along the process, you're going to be able to start communicating. You're going to be able to start consuming native content. But it's not that, you know, you're going to start enjoying the process once you get to the finish line. Right?
No. It is the journey, isn't it? And you are going to hit the wall at times. You are going to hit the wall. You're going to hit that bit where you kind of go, why aren't I progressing? Why isn't this as easy as it should be? You're going to hit the wall. Just enjoy the journey.
Exactly. Well said.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Ken. And it was a pleasure. Thanks so much for watching this interview. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it was helpful for you. And if you want to know more about language learning, language acquisition, like, you know, what's the best way to learn a language, ideas for language learning, the best resources at different levels, here you can find the whole playlist with all the interviews I've done so far with different researchers, teachers, polyglots, and so on. And finally, right here, you smash this guy right in the face to subscribe to my channel. I really appreciate it, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye-bye.